You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Economists keep wondering lately, why do people feel so bad about an economy that looks so good, at least on paper? Wages are growing faster than inflation. Unemployment has stayed below 4% for more than 2 years. But consumer sentiment is still 20% lower than pre-pandemic levels. One economic journalist recently suggested in the New York Times that one reason behind that discrepancy could be the fact that robust safety nets created during the pandemic have mostly gone away. Since COVID-era benefits have ended, child poverty has more than doubled. Evictions and hunger have gone up significantly. Nearly 18 million people have lost Medicaid coverage. We're taking a look at how the removal of COVID safety nets may affect everyday Americans. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Did you receive some kind of financial or other aid from the government during the pandemic? How did it help you? What has it been like since that went away? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Margaret Perez Brower is an assistant professor of political science at the University of Washington. Margaret, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You've done a lot of research related to this. We'll get into that in just a bit. But big picture, what is your take on that sort of opening concept that we've got some traditional markers of the economy looking pretty good, but people not all that confident in the economy?
Yeah, I mean, I think about that a lot, right, from my perspective. And, you know, small things like there are these big, you know, increases in GDP, increases in jobs like you were talking about, but simultaneously, people are actually saving less now than they did, and they have increased debt post-pandemic. And so in connection to what you just said about safety net policies, right, when people got the stimulus check, it was for some, it was the first time they had emergency savings. So that was huge, given that now, you know, 30-some% Americans don't have emergency savings. So even though the economy may look great from some perspectives, if we look at like debt and savings accounts, you know, it's telling a different story that wasn't necessarily the case when there were safety net policies in place.
And one other concept I've heard is the concept of people feeling precarious. Even if things seem to be going okay, it might take just one loss of a job or big healthcare expense, or the list goes on and on, for that all to go away. Do you think that's part of the story?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, with the example I just gave, if you don't have emergency savings and someone in your family has a health issue where your expenses go up astronomically, well, then you are in a precarious situation. And after COVID-19, right, people can imagine that scenario much more easily now because it was a reality for so many people.
Can you tell us a little bit about some of the key pandemic era social safety net programs or extensions that came into place over that 2020 to 2021 era?
Yeah, absolutely. So I could go on forever about that. Mm-hmm. So I'll just highlight a couple of key ones. So the couple of key ones that really had a huge impact were the expanded child tax credit, right? Families of children were receiving more money. We had the expanded Medicaid, Medicare. That was when we really gave more waivers and we brought down eligibility requirements so people could access healthcare better. And extended unemployment was really huge too from my research. So being able to have unemployment for a longer period of time and getting that $600 bump a week for folks was really huge. I mean, we even know with extended unemployment that ended up bringing people out of the poverty line. There was about 4.7 million more people, including 1.4 million children, that would have been below the poverty line if not for extended unemployment. So those are a couple of the key ones and also medical leave, paid family medical leave are some of the big ones.
As I understand it, you have some ongoing research going on right now where you're talking to people about, you know, what these different programs meant for them, what they did with these sorts of things. What I know this won't be published yet, if you don't mind spoiling it a little, what kind of things are you hearing?
Yeah. So, you know, speaking to people directly is such a important way of really understanding the impact of policies. And we've learned so much from speaking to folks who were able to access, you know, extended unemployment, for example. So for some folks, extended unemployment was a transformation in their lives. And I'm talking about the people I spoke to in precarious industries like the hospitality or the retail industry, where they really didn't have a ton of economic mobility. And for some, that extra bump in extended unemployment, it allowed them to transition into new careers. For some of them, they could start to open their own businesses. So actually, some people got to experience economic mobility for the first time just because we added a little bit more money and a little bit more time to unemployment. And that's huge.
We are talking about a COVID-era benefit extensions, which came and went now that we're out of the official emergency. Margaret Perez Brower is with us from the University of Washington. You could join in with your experiences, your questions, your thoughts at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Margaret, you were just talking about, you know, some of the benefits that people saw from those COVID-era supports. What kind of things are you hearing from people now that a lot of those added benefits or extended benefits have expired in the post-COVID emergency era?
Yeah, absolutely. So for folks, the good news is when we talk to people, we really get the full scope. So we were talking to folks last year up until 2023. So we really get to hear how their lives change, right? When extended unemployment goes away, when there's no stimulus check, when there's no eviction moratorium. And, you know, the answer to that is that things are precarious, as you said earlier in this segment. Folks, they have gone through their savings, right? For the first time, they had emergency savings. Well, that got them through a pandemic, and now it's gone. For other people who didn't get a chance to, you know, pivot when they had extended unemployment, right, it's made things even harder for them to try to break into new careers in different industries. And then overall, especially with the with student loan pause going away, for a lot of people I spoke with, having the student loan pause, well, that money was huge for them. It covered unexpected bills. Again, it went into emergency savings they didn't have before. So starting up those student loan payments has also really changed their economic stability right now.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Brian is with us in Buffalo County. Brian, hi.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. What did you want to ask about?
I was just a wrinkle to throw into the program here. Just about the COVID era problems, not problems, but the programs, that possibly maybe, you know, all the money from the programs maybe contributed to the current inflation. Because I think that they definitely had value and people definitely needed them. But I think possibly that the spending from the programs maybe contributed to the inflation.
Gotcha. I think Brian, it's a great question. And Margaret, talking to economists, there's different weight that they put on how much of that extra COVID era spending caused the inflation versus logistics supply chains. Get a bunch of economists in a room, you can have a pretty good punch up, I think, arguing about that. Is that something you look at, though, in weighing the benefit of these programs, the risk that they might have added to inflation?
Yeah. Well, for one, you know, inflation is going down. So I would say that even if it did have a spike that was connected to this, influx of funds going to social safety nets, it still was worth it, right? At the end of the day, you know, your bottom line of folks who are living under the poverty line, who really need to get by, really need to become a priority, which is why social safety nets are so important, even sometimes at the cost of changes like inflation. Though I'm not sure that necessarily is interconnected, but it's a great question.
Brian, thanks for the call. And Margaret, in talking to people about how far their money goes, whether during the period when they have these supports and not, did they refer to inflation and the cost of living as part of their story?
You know, sometimes, yeah. But it was more so in reference to them not having enough resources. So for example, someone I spoke to was eligible for SNAP, and that was great. But when they actually went to the grocery store, they couldn't get the amount of groceries they really needed to get by that week. So they often spoke about it more so in relation to the fact that they weren't getting enough of public assistance to be able to afford prices at the grocery store. So in that sense, yes.
And Margaret, I think this was in something you co-wrote, like a mom might be talking about the assistance, meaning hey, if my kid asks for some fruit at the grocery store, I can now afford to buy fruit. I mean, this, we're not talking about, you know, a lot of extravagant spending here, but things that we might think of as basics.
Yeah, that person I'm referencing was trying to buy a rotisserie chicken, some onions, and some carrots. So that those are pretty basic items.
Talking to Margaret Perez Brower, assistant professor of political science at the University of Washington, talking to us about her research on government assistance that people received during the pandemic, how it affected their lives, what it means now that a lot of those COVID-era programs haven't been extended or expired. You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your questions, maybe your experiences. Did you, during the COVID emergency era, get extended unemployment benefits? Did you become eligible for food assistance of some sort, or maybe more than you would have been? Was there a program that you had previously had to reapply for again and again that just it was able to let it ride for a while during COVID? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We continue our talk with Margaret Brower, assistant professor of political science at the University of Washington, about how the end of pandemic era benefits have affected people's economic circumstances and outlooks. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. Love to hear from you if you have a story to share about receiving some kind of benefit or an extension of benefits during COVID, whether it was a related to health coverage, food, unemployment. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Margaret, one change for some programs, I know with certain kinds of health coverage and others, wasn't just the amount or the duration, but the bureaucracy, where in the past where you'd apply for something and then you'd have to reapply and reprove that you had economic need for it. During COVID, there was more of a let it ride mentality, making sure people got what they needed and not have to keep re-upping for that. Is that something people talked about? Did that show up on their radar? Like, yes, I didn't have to do the bureaucracy again and again and again.
You know, I wish I could say yes, but honestly, actually, there's still a lot of bureaucracy people still navigated during the pandemic. Like one of the biggest complaints actually was while extended unemployment was super helpful, for some people, it took a month to get that benefit and they would call and it would be really hard to get the right eligibility requirements. So in those settings, actually, the bureaucracy was alive and well. If you're looking at Medicaid, then the Medicaid program was a lot more accessible for people. They had really taken off those requirements and eligibility restrictions, so they could be able to be more eligible for Medicaid. And in those instances, folks would be able to access like therapy for mental health issues that they'd never been able to access before because Medicaid had changed. So it's a dual story. The bureaucracy is, you know, it lives, but it's less in some policies and more in others.
Your research has also looked specifically at how the pandemic may have affected women of color different from other women. What kind of things have you seen?
Yeah, so, you know, the pandemic had a huge impact on women as a whole, right? VP Kamala Harris declared a national emergency, right, when women lost 156,000 jobs and left the workforce. But we know of those women that Black and Latina women in particular were most impacted and that they had the highest unemployment rates. And they still have the highest lag time now after the economy has recovered jobs and being able to get jobs. We also know, too, that they were segregated in industries like retail and hospitality and food services that had the highest layoffs. So that's why they were affected so much by the pandemic disproportionately compared to other groups.
Does that make it hard to have a one-size-fits-all approach, whether we're talking about an emergency time like COVID or trying to come up with good social safety net policies in normal times, whatever that means?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Dara Strolovich just published a book, When Bad Things Happen to Privileged People, and she focuses on public crises. And one thing that she found is that, you know, there are these crises already happening disproportionately to groups like Black and Latina women. But when we have these broad, when the public crises ends up affecting mainstream populations, then the government responds with mainstream policies. But that doesn't really get at the intricacies and nuances of how these different groups have been, you know, marginalized or segmented in the economy and ways that need bigger boosts or more attention. And so if we don't give them that attention, or we don't think about policies that can reach people based on their unique positionalities, then we really don't reach them at all. And we continue to have things like, you know, racial equity gaps and et cetera.
What would have to change in our social safety net system to be able to respond to those needs differently? It sounds like it might be a big conceptual change at the federal government level.
You know, it actually really isn't. I would argue that if you end up thinking about social policies and trying to reach groups that are a little bit more vulnerable and in more precarious situations, like Black and Latina women, it really kind of means doing things that was already happening in the pandemic. So, you know, expanding the child tax credit for, you know, Black and Latina mothers. We're going to benefit all mothers with that policy. But, you know, Black women who are the majority breadwinners in their families, they're going to benefit a ton from that policy. So when we talk about thinking about, you know, uniquely targeting policies to groups, it's not that it doesn't lift everyone else up. Everyone gets lifted up with these social safety net policies, but when we target them to people who disproportionately are at need, we're able to make sure that they get lifted up too. And that's the equity part of it.
Talking to Margaret Perez Brower from the University of Washington, looking at COVID-era social safety net-type policies that might have extended various kinds of benefits to more people or extended things like unemployment benefits. Still time for you to join in with your thoughts, your experiences at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Margaret, one thing that there were arguments about as they started to expire were extensions of school nutrition programs, school lunch and breakfast, offering it to a wider variety of students, extending it through summers and things like that. I'm curious if, in particular, the women you talked to had experience and thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. That came up a lot among mothers. And that was huge. I mean, when COVID-19 happened, right, and kids were not going into schools anymore, I got to actually hear the inverse of what happens when those practices aren't in place, which is that for some mothers, right, the school that was being able to provide these different types of meals for their kids, now suddenly they have to provide those meals three times a day. And for folks who don't have the resources to be providing healthy lunches at home, right? That was a huge loss. So we can imagine what the addition of that would mean for them and their lives and their families.
Are there lessons you're hoping we can take away from some of the more successful programs during the pandemic that you think could shape the way we shape policy post-pandemic?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I would put a plug in for paid family medical leave, right? You know, we've been told for decades, right, that this cannot be a national policy. And yet during the COVID-19 pandemic was the first time there was a national policy that provided paid family and medical leave. If we're talking about reaching women, if we're talking about reaching families, having something like paid family medical leave is what allows people not to live in that kind of economic precarity you and I were talking about. If you can take the paid time off to take care of your kids or to take care of a caretaker or to take care of yourself, right, you're going to thrive in your job and you're going to be part of a thriving economy. So I think policies like paid family medical leave are policies we should revisit because they're the policies that are left on the chopping block after the COVID-19 wave of relief policies have passed.
Let's go back to our callers. Sally is with us in Madison. Sally, hello.
Hi. I'm a single adult senior in my 70s, and I'm just so grateful for the money that came to individuals like myself during COVID, and the generosity that I experienced in the food stamp program and through the Medicaid extensions. It was a godsend. And I, listening to the conversation, it brings to the surface for me I wish so much that our country could be more kind to its citizens as it did during COVID, because it helped so many of us.
Sally, thanks a lot for the call. Margaret, just a minute left. Your thoughts on what Sally had to say and her experience.
Yeah, I mean, Sally, thanks so much for sharing that with me. It's really affirming, and you're not alone. So many people felt that way. And you use the word kind, and I will use the word caring. You know, safety, social net policies are caring. They take care of Americans so that they can be able to thrive in this country. And we want that for everyone. And so I'm so happy to hear that these programs reached you and that they had that impact on you. They certainly had an impact on the other people that I spoke to as well.
Sally, thanks a lot for that call. And Margaret, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Margaret Perez Brower is an assistant professor of political science at the University of Washington. She talked to us about her research on COVID-era benefits. She's working on research right now, talking to people about how their lives were affected by those benefits and what has happened since they expired, or the extensions expired on many of those benefits. Still time for you to share your own experiences. You can email ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, today's primary elections will set the stage in Wisconsin for the November general election, especially the race for the state's electoral college votes for president. We'll look at today's results and the road ahead in the campaign for Wisconsin. And data centers, server farms, and more are gearing up to meet the demands of artificial intelligence and cryptocurrency. That's all putting pressure on the American electric grid. We'll find out what kind of impact that could have here in Wisconsin and around the country, and how the energy industry is scrambling to respond to those demands. That and more, all coming up tomorrow here on Central Time.